Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Don and Andy, it's so good to see you. How are you?
You can come in the door.
No, I just got to check.
I just want to make sure you got enough distance
here.
Yeah,
we're good.
Oh, yeah.
Good,
that's more than 6 feet.
Hey, so this is going to be our Thanksgiving podcast, all right?
Okay.
And I wanted to come by and say hi to you. Don't give me the deep question yet. Here's the how you doing today? How you doing today? Not the deep question, just the...
Oh, today's great. Today's great. Yep, we've already done our housework.
Which
house
is
clean.
Which way?
It's right here.
No. It's those little, two little things on top. You see?
Oh, we need this way?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah, really?
All right.
Steve Scher giving us directions, right?
Yeah. What would we do without Steve Scher? Okay, so it's a great day. We finished our housework. We're seeing these two wonderful men, Steve Scher and Dave Domke, and we're having cornbread stuffing delivered later today, and Thanksgiving dinner delivered tomorrow. So we're good.
Well, that's her opinion.
That's my opinion. Yeah. What's your opinion?
Well, you know, it's a day as usual, pretty much. You know, we have done the work that Donna talked about. You know, I'm not too sure about how I feel about Steve and Dave, but
sure.
But we welcome him anyhow, and am glad really to see both. Okay,
it's great to see you. I know that one of the things Steve has taught me over time on podcasts is to describe a little bit, to visually describe. Okay, so I'm sitting outside on their kind of what do you call this area?
The patio
uh-huh. area,
yeah.
Right outside Donna and Andy's condominium, or here in Columbia City, and Steve is about 10 feet behind me, kind of monitoring, producing, and the door is open, and Donna and Andy are sitting inside on some stairs in their place. How long have you lived here?
6 years.
Yep. What do you like about living here?
The community.
It's a great community. It's pretty easy. You know, we had a 3,600 square foot house.
Okay.
And so we wanted to, you know, that was too much of us for us old people. So we wanted to downsize, and we cut it in half. And even though there are stairs, it's still been pretty easy to matriculate. We use every room in our house every day. And that was not something we used about three rooms or four rooms in the other house every day.
Yeah.
And so it was a big difference. But I love the community. As I have always described it, it's like a New York neighborhood. You know, you've got just about everything here. The only thing we don't have in this neighborhood is a service station. You know.
Okay.
But other than that, we've got it all.
Well, and to tighten it down even, the townhouse that we're in now is one of nine in this courtyard, and it is quite a small and
wonderful community.
Mm. So, you know, I think you're going to ask a question about this later, David, but since Andy has been ill, taking garbage out has been a challenge for us.
Okay.
And so one of the neighbors simply said to me back in March, forget it, I'm doing it. So I haven't touched a garbage can since March. Mm. He takes them out in the mornings and he brings them back at night. And that's a kind of way that folks are just, they're really great. So it's both our small community as well as the one surrounding us larger here.
That's really great. That's lovely. When Lisa and I moved to Seattle back in 1998, we lived in a courtyard townhome community that had about 10 in it also. And it was cool. There'd be like Friday night, go out and have drinks in the middle, right? And sit there and talk. And it was really neat. We haven't had that experience since, because once you buy a home, you're just like the homeowner, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Makes a big difference, for
Although
sure.
Although where we used to live in, we lived in Mount Baker, just a mile from where we are now.
Uh-huh.
And we lived in a cul-de-sac. And there were three families, and we got to know each other. And so we then started to have rotating meals. You know, once a month we'd get together and we'd have the appetizer at one house, entree at the other, and then dessert at the other. And that was really great, you know, too.
We had each other's keys and security codes. And I mean, it was really a very close. So we were, you know, it's a little concerned when we moved here, how close would this community be?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been nice to see it build over time.
Yeah.
That's great. So,
lot of that is due to Donna.
A lot is due to Donna, sure. So my mother passed away when I was young, and my dad passed away in 2009. And over time, I have, some of this has happened organically and some of this has been a little intentional. I have had, I would say, 5 to 10 people in my life who are mentors and supporters and elders and wise people who I have felt a different kind of love and support from your parents. From your parents, they have an investment in you that's a little different than other people, right?
Yeah, we hope so.
And I'm learning how to kind of like wear that as a dad right now with my own kids. But you two are in that cluster for me.
Wow.
You two are.
That's a serious honor.
That's honor. Yes,
thank you.
And you have given so much love and support and wisdom to me over time. And I wanted, you know, I do a daily podcast for a period of time now, kind of walking through this historical moment that we're in. And I thought I want to do one special for Thanksgiving. Okay. It's a complicated holiday in the big picture, Thanksgiving is, but the best of it is to like Thanksgive for the people in your life. Right. And so I wanted to come see you.
Well, we're glad you did. Well, yes.
Yeah. I mean, literally, right?
Look us in the eyes. And yeah. We're far enough apart that we are not even wearing masks right now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that it's not a Zoom, that because the seeing now feels so much different. While I satisfied in some ways by Zoom, that this is much more satisfaction. You know, I can give virtual hug, but it's much more than a electronic one.
Me too. I knew we could do Zoom, but to be a little further vulnerable about all this, there have been moments in my life with loved ones where I have not taken the step to go see them, you know, in meaningful moments, right? And those are sad disappointments in my life when I look back on those, right? So I was gonna come see you, right? It's gonna come see you. And Steve has been generous to come along the way and to shepherd this whole podcast and all of this. Thanks, Steve.
Good. Now take a moment and make sure your numbers are forward like they're supposed to be.
Okay, it looks.
You see it ticking forward, right?
Yeah, it's still counting, right?
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Yes, and there's a green light on there.
We're good, Steve. Okay.
Okay. Producer says it's okay to produce.
So Steve is the professor right now at the UW. He's the one who's teaching there. I'm not teaching there. He's the one. Yeah. So I wanted to come see you because I love you and because you mean a ton to me. And I also wanted to come see you because I don't know what the future holds. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And so I asked you in advance if you'd be open to talking a little bit about where you're at. And so... Andy, can I ask you how you're doing and what the big picture looks like for you right now?
Well, very little has changed. I mean, since I got the news that, you know, the chemo is stopping because it's making no difference at this point in time. I knew it had to happen at some point, but you just don't want it to happen now. You know what I mean? Because that was the word when I was first diagnosed with this. That you know, it was a very aggressive form, and so it didn't look good. Well, I've lived a year now.
Okay.
And so and my doc was talking about being impressed with how I've been, you know, and some of it I think is due to my own personal attitude that I'm not going to let it defeat me while it may finally kill me, but it will not defeat me before that point. And so, you know, that has been a guiding thing. Some of it comes from my mother. When my mother was a wonderful, energetic person. And I always said I would hoped that I would have as much energy as she had, you know, as I got older. Because up until the time she died, and she died from breast cancer back in the days when they knew very little. She died in 1981. And, you know, but at that, even then, as she waned, if you will, as she digressed, I can't think of the word. The other thing about this chemo thing is it gets to your brain, and that really pisses me off.
Yeah.
Because I can't, I can't, I've got a decent vocabulary and I can't use it. So,
yeah,
you know, because it just, the words won't come all the time. But anyhow, I think there is a little added now that you know, I'm still going to try to keep my energy going and so forth. But I also find that I'm having a little more difficulty focusing, being able to concentrate. And so I'm not sure exactly how long, what that entails or what that says about us or me. But that's where it is at this point. But you know, I'm a stubborn cuss, and so I'm gonna as I tell people, I'm gonna live until I can't do it anymore.
Donna, what is your kind of reflections on how Andy's doing?
Well, I think what he said is exactly my experience. His spirit and energy keeps me going. And I have a friend who lost her husband a little over a year ago. And I remember her saying to me, and I think about this frequently now, that she has a close community of friends and family. And she's never alone or lonely. But she is no longer the most important person in the world to someone else. Mm. And I think about that for those of us that are in long-term relationships. Andy and I have been together for 39 years. And that really is true. I mean, your spouse or your living partner is really the only person in the world that you're the most important person in the world for. Mm. You know, children grow up and have their own lives. And while you're important to them, and it should be, the relationship is different than it is to a life partner. And so I'm just milking every day that I can with Andy, because I don't know how many I'll have. We've certainly had more already than we thought we would, given his original diagnosis. So I'm grateful for every day.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I think about, the one real sad thing for me, is that I'll no longer be around her.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a lot of things could happen, but I already missing her. Mm. And I see that, and it's really a kind of, it's best word right now is silly thing, that I would miss missing her because I won't know anything about it. But I'm already doing that, you know.
He's really worried about who's going to feed me.
Well, I've been here, I think, 3 or 4 times to your place, and every one of them has been some spectacular meal.
right.
thank you for sharing all that and more here. Thank you. What has been a thing that you've lost in the last year that you miss right now?
I would say for me, and I think for us, Andy can speak to that, is having meals with friends and, you know, community in our home. So that's the thing I think I probably miss the most. Yeah.
We love to entertain.
Yeah.
You know, and we've always done that. You know, one of the things that at least we have been able to sustain up until now is to be able to do that, you know. The groups are smaller because the house we used to live in, we could have at least a dozen around the same table. Now it's really comfortable with 6 and we can squeeze 8. And so, you know, but we can't do that, especially now that the virus has hit. You know, we haven't done much of that. We've been able during the summer to have a few people outside.
Okay.
But other than that, you know, other than family, our oldest son lives here, and we've, you know, had some meals with him more out over at his place than here, but over here. And that's just, you know, the way it is. So I think that's probably the largest thing, the greatest impact for me, for Donna. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me then ask, what is something you've gained this year that is different, a different thing that you just 2 years ago you wouldn't have said, like, I had that. It could be a perspective, it could be an experience, whatever.
Wow.
I think reflection time. We have a lot more just quiet time together than we did before. And, you know, our lives have been kind of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
I mean, we do love to entertain. We have had the biggest dinner parties, the wildest parties, the craziest things. And those are great memories. But we've just had quiet time together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a difficult question for me to answer. As I thought about it, I said, well, just, you know, how I am, how Donna and I are together, but it's been like, if anything, we've grown closer, but that's been happening. I mean, we've talked about that before, how much closer we feel the older we've gotten and the longer we've been together.
Okay.
And so to talk about insights, I think the biggest thing is that we've always kind of read to each other, but we now, you know, are doing that more, and then doing that more in terms of political stuff as well, books and so forth. So, I mean, I guess that has helped. I mean, we've always had those kinds of conversations. So it's like, it's just more, in a sense, it's more of the same, but it's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me before about reading to one another. And I want to ask you about a little deeper question. What is the emotional meaning of that to each of you? Why is that so poignant for the two of you? What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, we're both big readers. Andy reads almost exclusively nonfiction, and I kind of read one nonfiction book for one fiction book. I kind of try to balance my reading out that way. And so, you know, in the middle of a paragraph, we might stop and say, oh my gosh, and have a conversation that's 5, 10, 15 minutes long before we even get back to the book. You miss that if you're both reading it individually and then talking about it later. And so I think it's allowed us to have deeper conversations, particularly around some of the political issues, than we did before, because they're so in the moment.
Yeah, I don't know that I would add much. I mean, I had a thought, but it's gone away.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say pretty much the same. You know, that we are. We have a little bit more of a focus, I think. We schedule it and we do it, and like Donna says, you know, we have these meetings. I was thinking as she was reading, we're reading this one book now about how the South won the Civil War.
Won the Civil War, yeah.
Which is a really good book. I mean, I would recommend it highly, because we're learning things about events that we already know about, but it's almost like the backstory. It fills it out. And we would stop at some time, oh, I didn't know that. And it would lead off to another kind of conversation or whatever. Or we'll say, that's happening now.
Yeah. You
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So it was just, it's been very interesting, you know, to do that.
Yeah, in that book, you mean Culturally How the South Won the Civil War?
Yeah. Heather Cox Richardson.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
She's a terrific writer.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to... these podcasts are usually, so maybe we're like halfway through, okay? Can we talk a little bit about Common Power, okay?
Yeah, can I just say, before you even ask your question, that one of the things that I was thinking that we would be remiss, I think, if we didn't talk about Common Power and P4, two organizations that we've been deeply involved in and really indebted to, I think, in terms of... Andy and I have been part of a very close, beloved community for about 25 years, a little longer, and it began to dissipate. Kids grew up, moved away, got married, moved, people got ill, moved away, people died, and really it was literally gone, essentially, when we went on Project Pilgrimage. And out of that came a community called P4, which is a political action group that started with P4 people from the pilgrimage, and then we've added some others that you started, right? And then out of that, we also were with you at the beginning of Common Power. And those two groups have become very serious support communities and beloved communities for us. And that's all happened really in the last couple of years. So that's been something else that I think we have gained, really gained over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And the timing was just was incredible, actually. As one disappeared, the others stepped in and really have helped us through the last 2 years together.
Well, I think, as you know, for me, given my history with civil rights, going all the way back to the beginning on the first day that the boys sat at the lunch counter in Greensboro, I was there. And I have been concerned and tried to live what I consider the fruits of that, or the energy, the foundation of that throughout the rest of my life. And so by being involved with getting involved politically here in a much more active way, because my politics have been in terms of action wherever I was, whether I was teaching school or whatever, I was always political in that event. But now, I had been complaining probably for the past 15 years at least about what was going on, because it seemed that people had gotten lazy. You know, I talked to people and they say, "Oh, everything's fine," and I'm saying, "No, it's not." And I was worried about, and I started to say, "Well, where are the young people?" You know, because, you know, from what my own personal experience of being a young person in my 20s when this all started, to looking at around the world, whenever there was a significant political event or action or change brought about, it was brought about through young people. And I didn't see that happening in the United States. You know, we'd have a few things pop up, but they would like fizzle out very quickly, and people were trying to avoid being leaders. You know, and I don't think organizations can really thrive well without a leader, or maybe co-leaders, but you need leadership at the top. And I was, and you know, and I was getting older, and I knew that, you know, my time had passed in terms of that. I mean, there were things I could do, but it wasn't be out there organizing people in the way I used to. And so along comes P4, Common Power now, and doing the very things that just fill me with such great joy. Not only just some political action I can get my teeth around, but also in terms of being able to mentor and encourage young people, and how Common Power is set up, and giving fostering young leadership. And I think that, you know, that's wonderful, because now I can literally die happy, because knowing that there are young people who are going to be, you know, sincerely moving forward, taking this ball and running with it, and that's the only way that things can remain the same. I just hope that they can take the essence of where they are now and pass that on.
Yeah. You think about the folks that you were there with, Andy, and what they were able to go on and do, and some of them became a John Lewis, right?
Yeah.
But others didn't, right? They didn't. There was trauma, there was difficulties, there was loss, right? And so hopefully I agree that that one of our hopes in Common Power is that we're not only giving opportunities to folks, but that they will take those and build upon those in transformative change ways, right?
Yeah.
So what would be your kind of one thing you would say to me or to us in Common Power about that you have a life lesson, a thing you've learned over time from the incredible work that the two of you have both done in your lives, in organizations, in communities, and personally? What would you say, like, here's the one thing that hold close and tight to whatever you do?
Wow, that's a That's a tough question.
Yeah.
I think two things keep going through my mind, and so what that leads me to think about is bridging the two. Bridging a strategic long-term plan, and staying focused, staying intentional and focused about what you're all about, and bridging that with the day-to-day individual relationships that help you get there. I think about now how often I'm getting emails or mails or cards or phone calls from people that I coached or mentored 20, 30, 40 years ago, literally, and not having any clue that I was having an impact on somebody. And that those, you know, there's never too little an action you can give to somebody, because the littlest thing can have an impact that you had no clue about, and that you later get feedback about, and you say, wow, really? I mean, we just had that experience recently where somebody was telling us about something we did for her 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other and said, did you know that happened?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea. So the individual connections we have with people are really critical. But it has to be, for me anyway, I think it has to be mixed with a long-term strategic plan. What's the goal in keeping your eyes on the prize?
Wow. Yeah. Sure.
I think for me, one of the things is, as Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change you want in the world.
Yeah.
That's
good.
And that's how I've tried to live. I think you have to have, I don't sound preachy, but you've got to have a good moral foundation. You've got to understand what you're about. What is that one or two things that you'd really give up your life for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had to, because then you it gives you the passion to carry on. I mean, people do things a lot of times, like now even, to get involved because it's exciting. Because other people are involved. But what happens when the lights go out? Where are you then? Because that's, to me, I used to even say, what are you willing to risk your membership for? And I mean your membership in whatever group you identify, whether that's ethnic, whatever, that you hold dear. What would you do? Are you willing to risk your membership for if it were threatened? You know, because I know people get into especially political things in their lives. They may not think politically, but somebody says something, somebody does something that you know is wrong. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to stand up when everybody else is going for it or saying that's good? Because that is when you know what's necessary. There's been a lot, and I think I want to get the book. Joe Scarborough has written a book about Truman.
Huh.
And it sounds really great because they're talking about how he and the whole idea of leadership, that you know you've got a really good leader when the person can say, in spite of everything else negative going on around them, I've done the best I could do. You know, I know that what I've done has been honest for me. You know, it wasn't because I was worried about how someone else was going to really see me, how I did it, but I did it with honesty to myself. And so as long as you can be honest with yourself, you know, I mean, it's the only example that I can think of is a funny one too, was when I quit smoking. Because I'm gonna try to cut this story somewhat short. Essentially, I was involved in a quit smoking program because the place where I was working was, I was the PR and marketing person, and so they had gotten in touch. People would have been agitating for a smoking policy, and so they got the American Cancer Society to come. And during this period, the first, after at the end of the first session, and there were four 1-hour sessions, two each week, different weeks. The leader said, please come back with a quit smoking date, target date. And so I go home, and I was, at this time, I was a heavy smoker. I was smoking 2.5-3 packs a day.
Wow.
And I got home, and I was smoking, and I realized I was down to my last cigarette, and I didn't have any more of the carton on there. And so I just said, well, what are you going to do? Well, I said, well, I'll quit smoking. And so I said it. And then I spent the next hour in the house walking around looking for butts. And so at one point I said to myself, Andy, what are you doing? You're lying to yourself. What are you doing? You know, are you going to quit smoking or are you not? If you're going to quit, quit. If you're not, go buy some cigarettes. And I said, I'm going to quit. And my whole being changed. I mean, I had a whole different, entirely different feeling. But that's the kind of feeling. It's like I have felt, you know, with social justice and so forth. There are things I know that I would give up my life for because I just feel it's that important. And so that's the thing I would pass along to anyone, you know. Find out who you are. And as you know who you are, you just get better. And that doesn't mean you have to know today, but be open to learning, to be able to hear those things that you don't like, want to hear. But try to see, find out, where is the truth in that? What can I learn from that rather than getting defensive about that?
I think a brilliant example of integrity this week has been the Secretary of State in Georgia, who basically refused to negate or change the vote, even though it wasn't the vote he wanted. And I woke up the next morning and wrote him a thank you note.
Did
because
you?
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of integrity is rare. It's going to cost him.
Yeah, it is.
And yep. And we all know it's going to cost him, but it needs. We also need to see that he gains from it. He gains appreciation and validation for what he's done.
Yeah, he wrote an op-ed in the USA Today today.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh,
this guy is not going down. he said Trump threw him under the bus and that he stood up for integrity and that he voted for Trump and all this, but Trump only cares about himself, which is obviously the case, right?
Yes.
But that kind of integrity, especially when you get, it's a surprising moment. You don't expect it, right? Actually lifts my spirit in a different way because the reality is we don't make progress solely with people we already agree with mobilizing. We need a few others who we don't agree with coming along and saying, like, I'll stand with you, right? We need Pee Wee Reese coming over there with Jackie Robinson, right? Because Reese was racist, man. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's
what
it
takes.
As I understand it, that's already happened with Biden, even in some choices he's in, you know, that he's open to and intends to have even a Republican or two in his administration.
Sure.
Yeah. He wants people who have their own way of operating. It was somebody I can't remember it was Franklin D. Roosevelt, and I think it was George Marshall, who's the general then, he was having some discussion with his advisors, of which Marshall was one, and everybody was nodding their heads, but Marshall wasn't. And he had always called Marshall by his first name. And he said, he looked at him, he said, you don't seem to be going along with this. He said, I'm not. He said, but what is it? He told him why and so forth. He said, from that point on, he only called him General. He didn't call him by his first name. Because he gained so much respect for him because he stood his ground.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
So what do you hope to do tomorrow on Thanksgiving? What does your Thanksgiving look like tomorrow?
Well, it's going to be different than any.
Which will be when this podcast come out. It'll come out.
Yeah.
So what does your Thanksgiving look like?
Well, it's going to be just the two of us. We even decided not to go to our sons.
Sure.
Primarily because of one grandchild who works and he's male and he hangs out with his friends and so forth, and with this COVID going around at this time, and as crazily as it is,
I don't need any more help. I mean, I'm going to die eventually, but I don't need any more help.
So don't need your help.
Don't need your help. Yeah, it's working.
Yeah.
So we decided not to to go anywhere, that we're going to be here. They're going to bring us a meal.
Okay.
But it'll be here. So it'll probably be fairly routine, except Donna knows she what I'm going to say now is not going to make her real happy, but they're good football games tomorrow.
So he'll watch football games. We'll probably do a little more reading than normal, and we'll probably
play some games.
Okay.
And just it'll be a quiet day together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Found a great game, by the way, if you like.
Yeah. What do you got?
It's called Quirkle.
Quirkle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the little box you shake the letters?
No.
No. It's got four colors and four shapes, and you have to match them either by color or by shape on a board. They're little tiles, kind of like Scrabble tiles.
Oh, okay, okay.
So it's really fun, and I like games. We've got a couple that use both left and right brain. So here you're trying to look at both color and design, which is really a brain twist.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And I like it because I win most of the time.
Yeah, you know, there is that psychological, there's some kind of serotonin surge that happens there, right? And I have felt that about this election too, right?
Like, oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, yesterday, Linda Thomas Greenfield, when she was accepting the nomination to become the ambassador to the United Nations, gave a speech, right? Yeah. Pretty short, about 5 minutes long, but it's the lead to the podcast that we did today. And she says in it, you know, America's back, diplomacy's back, multilateralism is back. But she talks about her family.
Yeah.
And she talks about practicing what she has learned from mentors and her parents of gumbo diplomacy. All right, the making of things together,
right?
The talking while you're doing a task, right? And then sitting down over the meal and building genuine community, not necessarily agreement, but genuine community, right? That's the beloved community you're talking about, in the kind of diplomatic world. And I think that you too, have helped me at this point in my life to understand some of the ways you do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not always agreement,
right?
But it is always together,
yes.
Right? Absolutely. And I think when I was younger, I think agreement, because of this family system I was raised in, that agreement was the essential piece you had to provide to my father, okay?
Yeah.
It was agreement. Yeah. Disagreement was not a tolerated phenomenon, right?
And I think that's true in more families than it's not.
Sure. So to unlearn that and to build a new system for me personally, but also to extend that to civically,
right,
to professionally, has really been, I think, a lifelong process,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, any of those kind of standard ways of being that we learn growing up are pretty hard to shake if we decide later that that's not what we want to be.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, that's a lifetime process.
Yeah,
I think
it definitely is.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's a. I want to end with this. It's a little maybe weird to be having this conversation via podcast. I want to just say something about why we're doing that. We're doing this because I first personally believe that part of my role in Common Power is to share the journey with the entire community. So that's why I do these podcasts and my lectures and all the things we do.
Which are wonderful, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you.
We've enjoyed both of them.
Yeah.
You, in asking you to have this conversation via podcast, that's a little bit of a different enterprise on your side of it, to decide to have a podcast conversation. Like, we could be sitting here just talking without holding these microphones, right?
Right. Yeah.
So can I ask you, as an entree to ending this, why are you doing this as a podcast? Now, I know I asked, but besides the fact that I asked, why are you open to doing that? What is your kind of thinking about doing that?
For me, it's it's another extension or a further extension of what we've talked about. Hoping that something that you say strikes a chord somewhere, and someone will say, oh yeah, and it'll make a difference, because you never know. And so, as I come toward the end of my life, I wonder about that. And like Donna said, you know, to get recognition for various things at this point, especially when you don't think, you know, you haven't thought about it, because we used to be, when we were more active, there's an organization called CETAR, Society Education.
Intercultural Educators, Trainers, and Researchers.
Researchers. Mm-hmm. And it's a national organization. And we were both involved. Donna organized one of the annual conferences. I was president for 2 years. And you know, we haven't been active for, at least for me, probably in the last 7-8 years at least. Mm-hmm. And Donna, maybe a little less so. But we get this call from the then current president that she wanted to talk to both of us at the same time. Mm. Well, what she wanted to tell us was, there is an award named for the founder of the organization that I established when I was president, and we named it after her.
Yeah.
And it's an honor. There's a lot of criteria to become one, and they had voted the both of us to receive one this year. And we were, when she told us, we looked at each other and said, oh, really?
Wow.
And then the accolades that came afterward for people who were so happy that we had gotten it, and you know, and what it had meant to them in our work. So yeah, that's what it's about.
Wow.
I think doing this podcast, David, is an extension of who we've been as a couple. Andy and I started our relationship with a living together contract.
Okay.
Which we wrote and signed and renew every January 1st and have for the last 38 years. And a number of young couples, in talking to us, said, wow, what did you put in it? And can we see yours? And so we have just given people at request our living together contract so that they can think about what might be in theirs. Hmm. We elected not to get married until 2010. My God, that was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, because we said we would not get married until our gay and lesbian friends could.
Okay.
We wouldn't join a club that wouldn't let blacks in or that wouldn't let women in. So why would we join a club that wouldn't let other friends in? And I think, and we shared that pretty openly with people. So I think that we have felt like anything we have that somebody else might use, we're open to sharing. And so that's kind of why we were willing to do this. And hopefully it will help everybody have a joyful Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate it. I love you both.
Same
back to
Same.
You.
Yeah. And I'm really glad I came to see you.
So are we.
So,
yeah.
I'm a little concerned about Steve.
Steve's over my shoulder. Is he awake still?
So cold. He's so cold. He feels so cold.
The great thing about Steve, though, is, and I mean this in all non-funniness, is Steve is a fellow journeyer. Steve will come with you, right?
Yeah, that's
he will
great.
Come with you, and that is a gift, man. That's a gift. So, well, happy Thanksgiving to the
Thank
two
you
of you
as well, to both of you, right?
And we got more work to do.
Yes, we do.
We got more work to do, right?
Yeah, sure. We're heading to Georgia.
We got to go to Georgia, get the Georgia work done, right?
Well, you see, my table is full of letters. That's Georgia.
That's Georgia right there, sure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.